I'm talking today with Kim Jordan, who is the CEO of New Belgium Brewing Company based in Fort Collins, Colorado, which is a leading microbrew company in the U.S. and a leader in sustainable practices. So Kim, it's great. I'm so pleased to have you join us. Start off by listing just a couple of the initiatives that you and your employees are most proud of. You have a lot of environmental and social responsibility initiatives that you take part in.
I think one of the things we're most proud of, which is not an initiative per se, but is the breadth of the work that we do, whether it's investing $12 million in a process water treatment plant with an anaerobic digester, which makes methane that we ship back to the brewery, and we turn it into thermal and electrical energy as a part of our power load to mitigate a part of our power load, or the incredible amount of transparency we have through open book management, high involvement culture, and employee ownership. We really, or our philanthropy program, where we're members of 1% for the planet. So between cash and in-kind donations, we donate 1% of our annual net revenue, not profit, but revenue, to environmental and environmentally linked causes in the territories that we're in. So we've really tried to sort of put in place the triple bottom line, if you will, people, planet, profits in our organization.
So one of the things you just mentioned is that you have employee ownership and a high involvement culture. After a year as an employee, everyone gets some ownership in the company. And this has been really interesting. One of the things I read was that your employees voted to install wind power, to power New Belgium off of wind power, even though it would be more expensive, because supposedly it was the right thing to do. And you've got this really engaged culture that, as you mentioned, open books, employee ownership, and participatory decision making. So does it surprise you that other companies don't adopt this kind of culture? And what are some of the perceived or real risks of this type of culture?
It actually does surprise me that other companies don't do more of this. I tend, because I'm here in my own world doing this, and I get out into the world, but I tend to spend time more with like-minded folks. When I do run across people who say, oh, I would never do that in my organization, or they do a very limited sort of hybrid version of that, I am surprised by that. I think the reason that people perhaps don't do more of that, I think they're probably twofold. One is that I think people, especially in privately held organizations, they're concerned that if people really knew what happened with the revenue and, what happened on the P&L and the balance sheet, that, chaos would ensue, people would start demanding things. I'm not quite sure. But for us, one, we have always tried to operate an ethical business. No one gets paid outside of the range of a market-based wage. At my position, I do not get paid, nearly on the scale of a large corporate CEO, because it feels to me like, one, we're not a large corporation, and two, just as I ask that we have market-based wage for my coworkers, that it's important for me to live in that same kind of way. So I think years ago, I gave our coworkers a quiz. This was in probably 1995. I had just read The Great Game of Business by Jack Stack. And it was very simple. We took $100 in revenue in, and we spent it on raw materials, labor, and essentially SG&A. How much money did we have left? And my coworkers generally said they thought that we had about $60 left of that $100. And for your listeners, I'm sure any of them who are entrepreneurs will know that we would all kill for that kind of net revenue, net profit. And the facts are a lot more compelling, and you can really get people to understand the business of running the business, and you can partner with them in doing those kinds of things. So I think one piece of this is kind of fear and or just concern. Fear is perhaps too strong of a word. And I think the other part is that it does take some work. You have to be thinking all the time about how are you, you know, at what point should you get coworker input, and how, what's the process for a particular decision? A lot of decisions around here are made by small groups of people. It's not always, you know, it would be chaotic if we had to gather everyone together to make, you know, the smallest decisions. But we try to remember that our coworkers want to give input and not so much feedback. And if they want to give input, that means that we need to keep them informed in the early stages of a process. And sometimes we inform them about what we think we're going to do, and then we get a little due diligence under our belt, and then we decide we're not going to do that. And part of the process is going back to them saying, well, that idea is no longer on the table. And that's just a natural part of decision making in our company.
I mean, certainly I feel like this type of employee culture and participation makes for a more enjoyable workplace. But do you think that it also makes for a stronger business? And what I mean by that is I was reading and it said, if it were your company, what would you do? If, you know, your company, meaning that if employees have a financial stake in this, are they more willing, are they to look for ways to be less wasteful? Are they more proactive about this? Are they more innovative? And so how does that play out? Do you really see this type of, since we all have a financial stake in this, we're really going to just push harder to find ways to save money and to make ourselves prouder of the company that we're creating?
Yeah, I think that is one piece of it. And it's not just I'm going to save money, I'm going to use less resources. We're going to try to live lightly on the planet. And I also think you asked first off, does this make good business sense? And I can tell you that we are solidly profitable. We don't tend to share our profit numbers with the public. But we're a solidly profitable manufacturer that's able to use some cash flow in the ratio of cash from operations to debt to fund the growth of our business. And as important as either of those things, when board members from New Belgium are walking around talking to people here about, you know, where's North? Where is the company going? What's the strategic plan? People here can tell you what the strategic plan is. And, you know, there's a high degree of alignment between where we've planned to go as a company and what departments are doing and what people inside of departments are doing. So our ability to be pretty focused around what's important to us is really strong.
Mm-hmm. This is really interesting to me, and I think it's a quote from you, but while there are many ways to be stewards of the earth, each company must determine which strengths they have to leverage. And I think I pulled that from an article I was reading. And that's such an interesting and important question, because a lot of entrepreneurs and businesses want to either build a socially responsible business for different reasons, some of which is because they want to bring their own passions to their work. How did you go about finding out what strengths you can leverage? And do you have any thoughts you could share with other entrepreneurs about how they can identify which direction to pursue?
Well, a couple of things occur to me. One of them is, what is it that you're particularly passionate about? Because it's really hard to stand in front of my coworkers and make a credible case for something that I really don't care very much about. So, you know, I think when you're looking at strategically where can I have the greatest effect, one piece of it certainly is what puts me on my toes, what gives me that animated sense of really being engaged in the work. And then the second piece is certainly looking at the low-hanging fruit in your organization. For us in craft brewing, that is certainly energy and water use. Those are two big environmental issues for us. Excuse me. So when we think about what kinds of things can we do to be good environmental stewards and pay attention to closing resource loops, those are two places that we naturally gravitate toward because they can have significant impact. So I think those are kind of two easy ways to get started thinking about that.
So how would you balance a personal passion? Let's just take, for example, that you're really passionate about animal welfare as the co-founder and CEO of this company. So then is the idea that, you know, you're transparent, you're open about this, and I know this is hypothetical, and your employees then gravitate to working for the company because of the issues you stand for? I guess my question is, how do you translate one person's passion to the rest of a company and the rest of the people who are involved who may have different passions?
That's a good question. To go back one step, for me, while animal welfare might be a passion for a person, I do think that it does help to have the passions try to align with the work you're doing. Mm-hmm. One of my passions is to create a community of people who are loving of one another and respectful and, you know, feel like there really is a richness of community where we can have respectful conversation and disagree on things. So that works in any business, for instance, where you have people involved. As far as particular at New Belgium, one of the things that we're really passionate about is energy conservation. For people who that's not their passion, one of the things we do have to say is, you know, that's great, but this company, you know, has a set of core values and beliefs and a set of strategies that are reflected in our vision, and they have to do, for instance, in this case, with energy efficiency and renewable energy production and those kinds of things. So while you would, to use animal welfare, for instance, while you would be interested in animal welfare as a big issue, that doesn't have a lot of application at New Belgium per se. So for instance, we have done a fundraiser for the last few years for the Humane Society, where we sell chocolate and beer and dog spent grain dog biscuits, and people are allowed to bring their dogs to the brewery for an afternoon of, you know, a fundraiser. That's a way that we can hit someone's particular interest kind of peripherally in terms of our operations, but not have it be the major focus of what it is that we do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a great example. So, Kim, you were co-founder of the company, and then you took over as CEO. Before that, you had a background as a social worker. And the business that you're running has a very interesting culture and different programs. How do you get these? Do you work with consultants? Do you read a lot? Does it come naturally to you? Do you have sustainability heads within New Belgium? And is there anything that we can learn from how you got to build this type of business without having an MBA and without perhaps spending a lot of time researching social responsible business? And maybe you did, but what other people could learn from your experiences?
Well, I think one, social work certainly lends itself to this kind of work, because and any kind of, you know, entrepreneurial business work where you have people involved, because it's a systems perspective. Which is a good perspective to start from. You know, we try here, rather than looking at who made a mistake, we try to start with how are the systems set up? Are they set up to, you know, help people to do their best work or not? So, for instance, you know, that's one of the benefits of that. As far as we really have not used consultants, it really is a combination of sort of, I have a pretty good gut instinct. And more importantly, I've really learned to listen to other people's great ideas. I work with a lot of great people who have fabulous ideas. And I don't need to be the only one with good ideas. And so, you know, when people say, for instance, New Belgium is nearly 20 years old, and our posse team, which are the people who communicate ownership principles and teach ownership, teach understanding, the ESOP and those kinds of things, they came to me a couple of years ago and said, we really think we need a sabbatical. And I said, I'm okay with the idea, but I got, you know, it sounds expensive, blah, blah, you know, I wasn't jumping for joy. They spent some time researching it. We met a couple of times. They really kept it, you know, they were advocating. I wasn't blocking anything, but I wasn't, you know, sort of making the road easier for them, I think. But since then, we've implemented a sabbatical program. I did say, you know, there are a couple of aspects of this that I think are important to pay attention to. They implemented the program, and it's been a wild success. And now when I look at people who have worked for us for, you know, 10, 15 years, who were looking kind of like they were dragging, like they needed some time for renewal, and they come back from 4 to 6 weeks of paid sabbatical, and they're thrilled. They got an opportunity to spend part of the summer with their kids, or to build a cabin, or, you know, to travel in the Mississippi Delta, or whatever their thing was, and they're so refreshed, I think. Gosh, those people were so smart. I'm really glad that I didn't say, no, we're not doing that. So, and the interesting thing about a sabbatical is that it really relies on the rest of the community to pull together, because you can't hire someone to replace a job, you know, for 4 to 6 weeks, except in some limited cases. So other people need to kind of pick up the work. And that's a good thing. It's a good inclination for people to say, you go rejuvenate, I'll pick up the slack.
So what was the business case for it? Is it that you saved money in employee retention because people had that time to rejuvenate, or you save money in team building activities because, just as you mentioned, the community comes together to pitch in?
You know, I'm sorry to admit this for your listeners, but we often don't make the business case based on dollars and cents solely. And in this case, I mean, it was more our coworkers are sort of looking burned out and like they need a break. And so it, you know, yes, there, it, it didn't, it didn't come down to retention or less team building. It came down to knowing that some people that are that we have worked with for a very long time, who are deep touchstones, because you have to work here for 10 years to be eligible for a sabbatical, and everyone gets one, and everyone is expected to take their sabbatical because we want them to leave and come back. We've worked with them for a long time, and they're a deep touchstone of our community, and we want them to feel joyful, because it makes it more fun to come to work every day.
No, I'm glad you said that. I know that Yvon Chouinard of Patagonia is famous for saying that every time he makes a business decision based on the right thing to do, he ends up profiting. And sometimes that's measured, and sometimes it's not. But, I think there are different ways to make decisions within business.
Yeah. I think it's a mistake to think that everything has a numeric calculation. Some things you just know are good and right. And also some things you can make an anecdotal case for that you can't actually quantify with numbers. And anecdotal cases can be as good as numeric cases.
Can I ask you about the wind power then, following up on what you just said? Because, and I touched on that briefly, how it was an employee decision, and although wind power costs more than the traditional energy you were using, the company as a whole decided to go for it. So there wasn't a business case there, I'm assuming. There was a moral case, or can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's been an interesting thing. That was a very long time ago. We actually had deferred compensation or phantom stock ownership at that time, not actual employee stock ownership plan ownership. So it really, it was a pretty long time ago, and it was when we were organized differently in terms of ownership. The reason that I say it's interesting is that is really has grown into, you know, a huge, it's certainly a part of our lore as a company. It was important, but there are thousands of decisions since then that have been important that were maybe made by departments that really the rest of us learned about later. We try to make sure that the interested and affected people are making decisions. I say to people, I don't buy forklift tires because I have no idea what kinds of forklift tires our company needs. But the guys who drive the forklifts all day, they know. And they know that our core values say that we want to use resources wisely, and so they're going to look for tires that last a long time. And that wind power decision is a huge piece of our story, and yet it's really the everyday decisions that people make that are consistent with our strategy, consistent with our core values and beliefs, and good for the bottom line, that really are what power this company.
Mm-hmm. And at the time, did you know that it was going to be this important move to shape the story and to shape the image of New Belgium?
No, not at all. In fact, we didn't talk about it for probably the first 3 or 4 years after the vote, because it just sort of seemed like something that happened. And then all of a sudden, we were sort of getting a lot more question about, tell us how this happened in your organization. But for a long time, it was really a non-event for us.
How do you balance environmental and social change programs or initiatives with business constrictions or considerations?
In terms of...
I know we talked before about not everything having to have a financial benefit, but do you have a certain process, or do you have just a process that you subscribe to, that programs sometimes some programs have to have a financial benefit and an environmental benefit. Some only need to have an environmental benefit, even if there's either no financial benefit or a long-term one. And, you know, how do you really balance where the money goes?
Well, you know, we have a fairly rigorous capital process, capital planning process each year for both our physical plant, what we're going to expand on, and within that our employee health and safety, quality, environmental, footprint reduction, resource reduction, and then sort of what builds community around here. And so most things that are physical plant investments go through a process like that. But when we're doing our higher level planning, before we've gotten to the point where it actually gets into a, you know, a capital investment plan, we talk about, we want to make sure that we have money this year to buy more PV panels, or we want to make sure that we can do more internal metering of our water usage so that our baseline data is for specific areas where we think we might have issues, so that our baseline data is better than it currently is, or any number of things. And things like that, internal water metering, yes, we will save some money on water, but it's not enough to pay for the work. We do it because one of our core values is to make sure that we're environmental stewards. So,
okay. Is there any a bit of advice or experiential comments that you want to leave other entrepreneurs who are building or looking to build socially responsible businesses?
I think that one of the happiest learnings that I've had as an entrepreneur is understanding that as a privately held company, I can use profits in ways that are really consistent with what's important to me as a person on this planet. And I think when you do that to build vibrant community and to do excellent, meaningful work and to touch people's lives, both as customers and in other businesses and in the communities that we're in, that's an incredible gift. And I love beer, and I love making beer, and I love being in the craft brewing industry. And even more, I love sort of the totality of this thing at New Belgium, this magic that we have here. And I feel a great deal of pride in my coworkers for their incredible contribution to that. And, you know, that's a life well lived as far as I'm concerned. So I couldn't be more pleased.
Did you second guess yourself over the time of building this company, or are you pretty confident and make a decision and go with it?
No, we change our minds not all the time, but you know, we are confident over the main that we have a foundation between our purpose, what we're on the planet to do over the longest time horizon, which in the case of New Belgium is to operate a profitable brewery, which makes our love and talent manifest. And we're confident in our 10 core values and beliefs, which speak to how we're going to behave as we do that. Then you go down to our mission. What is the big thing that we're going to stretch ourselves to do? And that's where it gets more dicey, because you think you're going to do this, and then you look into it more, and oh, for some reason, it doesn't seem as doable or as compelling, or, you know, there are some reasons occasionally that we'll pass on something. But I think that our belief in the foundation and our practice of it all the way through the company is strong enough that we know even when we're waiting to know what the right thing is for us to be stretching ourselves to do, I think we have a lot of confidence in one another and in the general premise of the thing that we feel fairly confident.
That's really interesting. I'm glad I asked that. Well, Kim, I know that we have to let you go. I really appreciate speaking with you today and hearing your thoughts on how you build this. And I've got a lot of admiration for the type of people you're working with and the type of company that you're helping to create.
Thank you, Olivia. It was my pleasure.
Thanks, Kim.
For more interviews about Cause Capitalism, visit causecapitalism.com.